Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Tribal Wisdom by Bridal Tribe. I am your host, Cynthia Williamston, and as always, I'm wishing everyone a happy Wedding Wednesday. Happy Wedding Wednesday to my Twitter friends as well, and my new Twitter friends. I'm so happy that we became friends, and I'm looking forward to our tweets together. I'm also wishing my Facebook friends a happy Wedding Wednesday. And you're going to get tired of hearing me say Happy Wedding Wednesday, so I'm going to stop now. Just so you guys know, there are so many new and wonderful things happening within the Bridal Tribe company, and I want to invite all of you to be a part of it. One of the things that's going to happen this January is we will be sending out a Bridal Tribe newsletter. So if you want to keep up with what we're doing, please do go to the website, www.bridaltribe.com, and go to the Contact Me form. Put your information in, and you will start receiving our newsletters in January. Also coming up in January, we have decided to partner with Dave Max of Chicago. He teaches the Chicago Step. We will start having dance lessons so we can all learn the Chicago Step for our upcoming February 14th event, wine and chocolate event here in New York City. For our listeners who are on the internet, if you'd like to call in and have a question or a comment tonight, the telephone number is 347-996-3160. Please press the number 1 if you would like to speak with us or if you have a question. And speaking of tonight we are speaking with the owner and founder of Untangled Weddings, as well as Untangled Resolutions, Miss Batabile Mtombeni. And we will be discussing how she would happen to help or deal with families who are having conflict during the wedding planning or any other situation where families have conflict. And I'm so happy to have her on. She is a dear friend. I hope you guys strap in because it's going to be fun. We're going to have crazy talk. I'm sure she's actually grinning and laughing right now, as a matter of fact, which is why I'm keeping her on hold just a little while longer. But I'm going to stop now and bring her in because the fun is about to begin. Hey, Tavi.
Hello, Cynthia.
How are you?
I'm doing well. Can you hear me well?
Good, good. Were you giggling when I said the stuff that I was saying, like I predicted?
No, I was not giggling.
But you are now. I knew you would be. So, you know what, just to get things started, why don't you tell everyone who you are and what you do, since I already know.
Right.
You know, because we always have our banter and our own conflicts that we always have to mediate together.
Well, I am so pleased that you've asked me to come on. It's a delightful honor, although I have to say, you know, I've been the host, and it's much easier being the host than the guest, I'm going to tell you.
Well, wait, let me tell you right now that you're coming in a little fuzzy. I'm not sure what's going on with your phone, but you're coming in a little fuzzy.
Okay, I'm sure this is better, isn't it?
Yes, it sounds so.
Okay. So I was going to try to do this with my headset, and it looks like I'm going to abandon that effort and do things the regular way with a phone.
Regular is good.
Okay. Well, for the purposes of, I do a bunch of stuff. This last semester, I've had the tremendous joy of teaching. I was teaching in the dispute resolution program and the sociology department at John Jay College. And I've discovered that, I knew that I loved teaching from the workshops that I do. So I plan and deliver workshops to groups, organizations, families, clubs about learning how to manage conflict, learning how to negotiate. And so I've always enjoyed that. This was a chance to now do a full-on semester-long courses and get to know these students really well, and I've really enjoyed it. The semester just ended, and I'm now doing grades.
Wow.
So this moment here is a nice welcome break from doing that, but that's what I've been doing mainly. for the last semester. But for the show, for the purpose of the show, I do want folks to know that I am a mediator, and I've been a mediator for the past almost 9 years now. I can't believe how fast it's passed.
I know.
Yeah. So it's nice, though, to be able to have that amount of time and experience under my belt. I've worked with well over 1,200 people in the last 8 years and had the joy of watching folks come in absolutely miserable and afraid, you know, really afraid. One of the greatest fears that we have as human beings is a loss of relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of issues that come into, well, generally speaking, the issues that have come to me are about relationships. And so it's been a joy of mine to be able to work with folks and help them to turn things around, see things from a different perspective, and learn how to communicate in ways that allow them to be honest and frank and candid about what's going on with them while maintaining their relationships and getting their needs met and understanding other people's needs and mending hurts and so forth. So I really enjoy what I do, and it is my pleasure to be able to share that with you.
Nice. Well, let's go off what you just said, because you just said the word needs, which is very important when it comes to two families coming together. I think you and I discussed the fact that I have watched at a few weddings where it became apparent that someone didn't want someone else to get married, that some mother didn't want that woman marrying her son, or that person didn't want that daughter marrying, you know, their son. It was just really wild. And because of the conflict between the two families, it made the wedding day so uncomfortable when it's supposed to be, you know, a very happy time, at least for the couple. It's supposed to be a happy time for the couple and the families, the coming together of two families. But I had you on the show today because there's a few people who asked me to talk about this. So tell me about how you come together, you know, bring these individuals together to, you know, think less about themselves and more about the couple. Or I'm not sure what the process is, but how do you make this situation better?
Well, one of the things that's interesting, I think it's unexpected for people to hear me say this, or people who are in my profession say this, is that trying to push down the feelings that arise can often backfire. So you said, you know, what can be done to make sure that the focus is on the couple, and trying to remember exactly how you put it, but, you know, putting aside the feelings and so forth. And suppressing that, I find, only allows it to fester and grow and become a greater problem that tends to sort of explode perhaps in that moment when the ultimate event is occurring, so the wedding itself, or can manifest itself at a later time, but that it's not healthy to suppress these issues. So in a situation where you have members of the family opposing the wedding, for example, it will be a normal thing for people who have different viewpoints on this. They have positions, right? They have different positions on the matter. They have their opinions on the matter, to then take sides and become really defensive.
Okay,
and so that's where you get a lot of the fight starting to happen.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You're coming in fuzzy again. I'm not sure what it is.
Okay.
But you started coming in a little fuzzy. There was some static on your phone.
Oh, okay.
So one of the things that you just said, you said needs and you said positions.
Mm-hmm.
How do these two words or states of being affect how families are, what is it, relating to one another?
Well, typically in any argument, you know, in any dispute, what's going to happen is that you have people who are talking at each other, talking past each other. You know, we've all been in disputes and so forth where you're really upset and you are very much concerned about getting your point across. And, of course, the other person is also very concerned about getting their point across. And we often get hung up at that level where it's about, I've got my point, you've got your point. And some people think that being really fair, but by allowing the other person an opportunity to make their point, and then the next thing they do is they're going to come back in and make their point. And they believe now they're having a conversation. Well, the truth of the matter is that that really isn't a conversation. What happens in a dispute is that there are levels of issues in the conversation. So I mentioned positions, for example, and I actually have a little hint that I use when I'm teaching negotiation and mediation. It's called the PIN, P-I-N, your position, interests, and needs. And so people tend to get hung up on positions, and position is another way of talking about opinions.
Mm-hmm.
It is my opinion that we should have the bridesmaids in red dresses. It's my opinion that we should have freesias instead of sweet peas as flowers. You know, so these are positions. What often gets lost in this are the interests and the needs. The interests, why? Why is it so important to you for things to go one way rather than the other? And then the needs, which is, what will it do for you to have things go one way or the other? When we can get into that level of conversation, the interests and the needs, that's when all of a sudden stuff starts to open up and you start to see what's truly going on. So that when you've got the family member at the wedding who's opposing the marriage,
mm-hmm.
first of all, I'm thinking that it shouldn't get to that point where you are at the wedding and you have this person opposing the marriage and you don't know why,
mm-hmm.
and it's a big scary thing because you don't know what's going to happen. Are they going to act up?
I've definitely seen that. So let's repeat that point, that if families who are planning a wedding right now, if you're planning a wedding and you know that mom, dad, aunt, uncle have an issue with your intended, don't wait until the wedding day or close to the wedding day to find out why. Get it out now, according to what she's saying, according to what Batavile is saying. Get it out right in the open, in the beginning, so that you don't have the fear of, you know, Uncle Joe jumping up in the middle of the ceremony, half drunk, screaming, you know, not today.
Well, you know, Cynthia, I will actually go back a little further than that.
Mm.
And say that even if you are not aware of there being any issues, it is useful to think about your wedding party as a team and to have a team meeting. Sometimes these issues do not become apparent until it gets closer to the wedding. Sometimes people don't know that they have objections to things until all of a sudden the time is upon them and they suddenly realize, oh my goodness, I have a problem with this.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that, you know, we've seen this happen before. Where you think that you know somebody, you know a family member really well, and then all of a sudden time comes for the wedding and something is really important to them. I'm thinking, if I have the right movie, I'm thinking about the movie Jump the Broom, or some movie where all of a sudden it became apparent that it was really important for a family member, I think maybe it was the mother, that the couple actually jumped the broom. And the bride thought that this is an antiquated, outlandish kind of thing. That's not the kind of thing she wanted at her wedding. She wanted this elegant kind of wedding and so forth. And as time for the wedding gets closer, all of a sudden it becomes really important for the mother that they jump this broom. So I think it's important that even if you don't believe that there's any issue, that you start out with deciding who your wedding team is. You know, we talk about the wedding party. They're not just a wedding party, they're your team. And that you get together and you have team meetings,
mm-hmm.
and think about it in that sense, because you want everybody to understand that they're all on the same side, that you have this common goal together to plan this magnificent day, which is often the most complicated planning process that most people go through,
mm-hmm.
And that you want it to come off in the best way possible. At some point, I want us to talk about expectations. You know, in the very beginning when we were talking, you said something that sparked the word expectation to me.
Mm-hmm.
This day, this wedding day, is fraught with expectation,
mm-hmm.
and that is prime fodder for a tremendous amount of discord and unhappiness.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
conflict.
There's nothing like, go ahead.
That's a conflict.
Oh, yes, exactly. So when you add expectation on top of, you know, these kinds of tensions and fears that people naturally have surrounding weddings, letting go, changing relationships, and so forth, you have a prime opportunity for things to just kind of blow up. And I'm saying that one of the ways that you can start to address that from the get-go is to think about your wedding team, you know, wedding party as a team, and start with team building.
Okay.
Before you get to the wedding day.
Okay. So one of the points of starting out knowing who your wedding team is what is the point of starting out knowing who your wedding team is?
Well, you want to manage expectations from the beginning. So
okay.
One of the expectations you want to manage is who's going to make decisions.
Okay. So in order to manage expectations, you should start out knowing who your wedding team is.
Know who your wedding team is, and your wedding team should know who they are.
Okay.
And should know what roles that they're going to be playing in, and should agree on what role they're going to be playing in the wedding team.
Okay. Okay. I'm just, you know me, I'm writing down the points because I'm going to be putting them up later in the event for people to catch. So I'll say it one more time and then we'll move on. In order to manage expectations, start out knowing who your wedding team is.
Start out knowing who your wedding team is. Make sure that they understand who they are, that they understand, you know, what I'm going to use football analogy.
Oh, boy, not
and
you.
Imagine. But, you know what position you're playing and what the responsibilities of those positions are. Maybe it's a basketball. I don't know. But, you know what position you play and what the responsibilities of that position is. You know, are you the maid of honor? Are you the matron of honor? Are you a bridesmaid? Are you going to, do the address book? Are you going to help with the planning? And, you know, are you the mother-in-law? Are you the mother? What kinds of input will you be giving, and who ultimately is quarterbacking this team? It's important for them to understand who ultimately has the final say-so, so that they can be comfortable with making their suggestions and giving their contributions, but ultimately understanding that the decision is going to be made by whomever.
I like what you're saying, because going back to the movie that you mentioned, Jumping the Broom, that same conflict with the mother and the son and the bride-to-be was, I think that she felt that her role in the wedding was one thing. The son was hiding everything from her. So she didn't know what to expect. She didn't know, you know, what to say. Well, she just knew that, like, as you said, that she wanted them to jump the broom and she wanted to get that point across. And nobody was expecting the chaos that erupted when she felt kind of left out of the whole situation.
Right.
She didn't know or understand her role in the situation.
Well, and you have just said something that's really important. You said she felt left out of the situation.
Yes.
When I'm mediating, sometimes I've mediated court cases, for example, mediated in small claims court, where it seems that the issue is about a material something. You know, it's about money. Somebody crashed into somebody else's car. The neighbor's tree limb fell during a storm or broke during a storm and smashed through the car window. You know, and so it seems like open and shut case. You know, the damage was $500, pay the $500. But on the road to getting to the court case, words were exchanged, things happened. And so we find that in order to fix the material issue, you really have to deal with the emotional issues, with the interpersonal issue. And if there's anything that people want, it is to be acknowledged more than anything else. And so here in this situation with the wedding, it's the same kind of thing. Mom wants to be acknowledged. And it may be that she doesn't ultimately get her own way, but she's more likely to be okay with that if she is acknowledged and her dignity is honored, even though she doesn't get her own way.
I think you need to say that again, because for the brides and the grooms who are listening, especially these days I always hear them say, I respect my mom, I respect my dad, but this is my wedding and I'm going to do things the way that I want to. But they tend to forget, not that they forget, but, you know, it's the bride's day, so she is very emotional about what's going on in her own life. And they're not always thinking about what the in-laws or the parents really want or how they feel about their role in this new family that's coming together.
Oh, certainly. Certainly.
So, it's good for you brides and grooms to listen and hear what she said. Make sure that they feel dignity. Wait, what did you say? You said it best.
Well, that their dignity is honored, that they are acknowledged,
mm-hmm.
so that people are more likely to be okay with not getting their own way
mm-hmm.
if they feel that they have been heard and that their dignity has been honored. And this issue of hearing is really important. It brings me back to something that I started out saying in the beginning, where, you know, you state your position and the other person states their position.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you've been in an argument, I'm sure, because I've been in an argument like this, where it seems like the other person just keeps repeating themselves over and over and over again. And they keep saying, you're not listening to me. And the answer is, well, of course I'm listening to you. I'm standing right here. You know, how could I can't hear anything but you, right? So, but the other person still is not convinced that you are listening to them. And the reason is because they have not understood that you have heard them. There's a difference between listening and hearing, you know, and really understanding what the other person is saying and having the other person understand that you have understood them. So what happens then is that in order to get this, you know, get to being acknowledged, this whole thing about being acknowledged, what needs to happen is for the person who is listening to know what they're listening for. That, you know, it's not just the positions, it's not just the words, but it's what underlies that. So, you know, the bride is saying, it's my wedding, it's going to be my way. That's a position.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that important to her? That is an interest.
Mm-hmm.
What will it do for her to be able to have that final say-so in what happens on her wedding day? What needs will that fulfill for her? That's important as well. So the same thing with, let's say, the mother-in-law or the mother or whoever it is in the family who seems to be digging their heels in and behaving in a way that seems really unreasonable, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then the question is, what's going on with that? And the clues come out when a person states their position. They will say what's bothering them without necessarily recognizing that they've said it. And it is useful for the listener to know what to listen for. Listen to the feeling words. And so it seems all, you know, mushy and all that sort of thing, but it works. It works. You're going to be listening for the feeling words.
Give
and
us
then,
a few of those feeling words.
Well, you know, you never listen to me anyway. You never take my advice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know,
okay.
You're headstrong. You always want to do things your own way. So what I'm hearing out of that is, you know, I feel as though you don't respect me.
Mm-hmm.
I feel as though you don't care about the suggestions that I make and my experience and about, mm-hmm. you know, what I bring to the table
mm-hmm.
As a person who loves and cares about you and wants the best for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, can you imagine somebody saying that in return to, well, you never listen to me and that sort of thing, coming back and acknowledging what's really going on underneath is that, you know, I feel set aside.
Right. Right.
And the need is, you know, I need to feel included. I need to feel respected.
Wow, this is turning more into a conversation of listening skills more than it is, I guess, dealing with conflict. Is more about your listening skills. So families, if you're listening, wow, I'm still kind of like, I guess, going through other situations that I've actually been in today and applying what you're saying, where what people are saying is not necessarily the complete emotion that they're expressing. They're really expressing something deeper. And if you're listening for the right key words, you'll know what they're truly saying so that you can begin to address and acknowledge what it is that's making them afraid.
Well, certainly. And it's a magical thing. We'll come back to that fear thing, but it's a magical thing. I can't tell you how many mediations I've been in where I've done this. It's called reflecting back,
mm-hmm.
Or paraphrasing. And I've done this for somebody, and not only was it the first time they really felt heard, sometimes it was the first time they realized that this is what they were trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
They've been so frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they've been trying to get this across, but to hear it expressed back to them so succinctly,
mm-hmm.
it is surprising, and it feels like such a relief they start to cry.
Mm.
You know, so I've had many a situation where it's just they just burst into tears and say, nobody's ever listened to me before. This is exactly what I've been trying to say all this time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it has an almost magical quality to it when you're able to do it and do it well. And you'll notice then that people will stop repeating themselves because finally they feel that they've been listened to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so if you want to think about it in terms of steps, you know, if I want people to go away with practical steps for how to do this, then it is about being in a situation where, you know, things are going on, and you're able to get to that place in your mind where you take a step back and say, okay, I'm going to listen. And so you're listening, and you know what you're listening for. You're able to separate out the positions from the interests and the needs. And you're able to paraphrase or say back to the person what you're hearing in terms of their interests and their needs. And it's all about emotional needs, generally speaking, that, you know, that down to the basic root of it, it's about emotional needs. And when you're able to say that back to them, that totally opens up doors. It can, like I said, have this sort of magical quality. But it's important to remember that you don't want to be throwing positions back and forth at each other. And even when you have listened to the person, you have to go through that step of paraphrasing for them to understand that you've heard them. You can't just listen and then say, okay, well, this is my position, or this is what my feeling is. And often people think that it's enough that they didn't interrupt, but it isn't. It requires a little bit more than that.
Right. All right. So then, of course, it's good for them to say, what I'm hearing you say is that you need this to make sure that they clarify.
But, yeah, so, you know, what I hear you saying or it sounds like, so that's also important, that couching language,
mm-hmm.
you know, that therapy kind of language that people mm-hmm. often kind of want to giggle at,
mm-hmm.
it works. So, yes, you don't want to tell the other person what they are saying,
mm-hmm.
but you do want to say what you're hearing from them.
Okay.
What I'm hearing from you is such and such. There's another thing that happens in that moment, which is that the person who is speaking may hear what they sound like for the first time and realize that this is not at all how they want to come across, or that they haven't been expressing their concerns in a way that truly reflects what they're dealing with. And so it gives them an opportunity to say, well, you know what, actually, that's not exactly what I meant. What I really feel is... And, you know, then they can express it and you can continue to refine that until they reach a point where they say, yes, this is precisely what I've been trying to say.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's a process.
Okay. All right. So step, listen and know what you're listening for. And, of course, you're listening for interests and needs.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about some more, you know, some other steps that we can utilize in the middle of conflict.
Well, it's also really important to recognize that in the heat of the moment, people are going to say things, they're going to put things in ways that are quite hurtful.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, blame is going to be involved, name calling might be involved, character assassination might be involved.
No, and, not in an argument.
You know, honey, it happens. You know, New York City, we have great examples of that right here in the city, don't we? Where, you know, people are going ham. And what is important to understand in that moment, and this is where getting help, you know, comes in, because I want to talk with folks about why getting a mediator is useful, and it's something that folks, I think, really don't think about, and they think, oh, I can handle this, but here's why that's a problem. When a person is engaged in that kind of character assassination, and it's pointed at you, what happens often is that the fear centers in your brain get ignited. Now, the fear centers in the other person's brain are already going, and you know that because they sound like they're kind of out of control. Mm-hmm. They're in defense mode, and the way that they are defending themselves is by being offensive. One of my favorite little examples is to ask the question, or to say, happy dogs don't bite. Happy
okay.
dogs don't bite, right?
Mm-hmm.
When do dogs bite?
Oh, of course, when they feel threatened.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
People are the same way. So when a person is barking and snarling, often our reaction is to say, oh my gosh, they're on the attack. I need to defend myself from the attack. When it's useful to think that perhaps they're defending themselves, that they feel that either they're being attacked or they're in danger of being attacked, and so they're trying to be preemptive about protecting themselves.
Right.
And so if you're able to, you can take a moment and say, what are they trying to defend themselves from? But that can be really difficult because, as I said, the fear centers in your brain get kicked up.
Mm-hmm.
We are also quite influenced by the behaviors of other people.
Yes, indeed.
You know, right. So one of the things that I like to do when I'm teaching my classes is to talk with people about the power of body language and about how it is the original language that we all speak. You know, before we are verbal, when we are infants, we spend an awful lot of time just absorbing the behavior of other people. And we become really adept at reading moods and body language and so forth. And we kind of lose the awareness of that as we grow older and, you know, being verbal becomes more important to us. But the truth of the matter is over 80% of communication is nonverbal.
Right.
So you've got this person who's saying all these words to you, but it's not just the words that are important. It's the tone of voice, the body language, everything that's coming across. And so it comes to you as a threat, and that those limbic centers in your brain, the fight or flight or freeze centers in your brain, get kicked up.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem with that is that those centers fire faster than the part of your brain that's called the prefrontal cortex.
Mm-hmm.
And the prefrontal cortex is where all of your rational thinking goes on, the part that says, slow down for a moment. Let's really look at this situation and analyze it, the analytical part of your brain.
Mm-hmm.
So when the limbic centers take over, you know, I can imagine you've been in this situation. I know I've been in this situation where I'm really upset with somebody, and I'm just raging about it. And there's a voice in the back of my head that says, maybe you're taking this a little too seriously. Maybe you could chill out a little bit. But I'm so into this rage, right,
mm-hmm.
that I just can't seem to stop myself, even though that tiny little voice in the back of my head is saying something. Well, that's what's happening. Is that it's actually a chemical reaction, and, you know, it's something that's going on biologically in your brain.
Mm-hmm.
It's very difficult to overcome that, and that's why I do often recommend that people bring somebody in who is not a party to the issues and
mm-hmm.
who has no interest in the outcome.
Mm-hmm.
Bring them in to help you to discuss what's going on and resolve the situation.
Nice. Agreed. But, of course, we have people who don't always agree to do that. They don't want to be a part of anything like that. It's almost as if they don't even want to be a part of resolving the issue. They just want what they want.
Mm-hmm.
How do you handle something like that? Of course, you know me, I'd be like, listen, you're not going to get what you want. You don't want to be a part of the solution. Get out.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you talk to a family member that isn't really interested in resolving the conflict, but just still more about getting what they want or just getting their point across?
Well, often I think that things seem that way because folks have not understood the PIN process, the position, interest, needs, listening. And so they haven't gone through a situation or a process where they've actually sat down and gotten to the bottom of what the interests and the needs are. And getting to the bottom of interests and needs doesn't mean that those needs are actually going to be met. But often just having them articulated and acknowledged is enough.
Right.
So before we get to the person who's truly out there and completely stubborn, I think that most people actually can be reached there. I'm thinking of a particular case that I mediated where the complainants came in, the petitioners came in, very positional about wanting the other person to pay for what happened. I mean, they were going to pay for what happened. And the position of the respondent was, I shouldn't have to pay for this. They should have had insurance. And besides, the stuff that was damaged is nowhere near worth what they are asking for, what they're demanding. I'm not going to pay. You know, you couldn't be further apart in terms of the spectrum of disagreement mm-hmm. as far as they were concerned until the story behind the items that were damaged came out. And the emotional attachment, you know, it concerned some items that had belonged to the complainant's mother who had then passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And the moment that story came out, the respondent, his attitude completely changed. And he was able to empathize and say, oh my goodness, I'm so sorry. My mother passed away a few years ago too. I know what it's like to miss her. I can't be more remorseful about the fact that those items were damaged. I totally understand why you were so upset. And just hearing that, you know, the complainants actually dropped the money part of the claim.
Wow.
So people who came in seeming totally unreasonable, irrational, the whole thing. Once they heard that, really, well, that's all that they needed to hear. So in a lot of cases, when you're dealing with somebody who seems completely uncooperative and, you know, totally wedded to their position, trying to allow for them to be able to express what actually happened and for you to be able to empathize with them often gets the job done. However, you're right. You may find a situation where the person just will not be consoled or, you know, will not be, cannot come off of whatever position it is that they're holding. And so then you have options. I tell people ask me, what is a successful mediation for you? And I think that the expected answer is that, you know, people resolve their differences and they're happy and they're shaking hands when they leave. And everything is, you know, rainbows and starlight.
Rainbows and Skittles and pot of gold and all that stuff.
Exactly. The whole My Little Pony, you know.
Mm-hmm.
What a good mediation is for me, or success in a mediation, is that there was a successful process. And I think at some point we might talk a little bit about what my role is as a mediator. I think a lot of people don't know what that precisely is, but that there was a successful process. The people who are involved in mediation are ultimately responsible for deciding what the outcome is, and a decision to agree to disagree is as successful a mediation as any other. And so there is the option of walking away and saying, you know, we're not going to see eye to eye on this, and it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, in the terms of a wedding, then you want to be able to make sure you plan so that the wedding can go off, you know, in a pleasant way, that you're not going to have somebody rolling up and making trouble at the wedding.
So that means no bringing of shotguns into the sanctuary.
No, my goodness. you know, if it's that bad,
mm-hmm.
You know, there's some conversations that need to happen.
Right.
But I am very happy to stake quite a bit on saying that when the conversation happens in an interest-based way, and this is what we call interest-based mediations, facilitative mediation is what I practice, Even if they come, the parties come away from the table not agreeing with each other, at least they understand each other,
mm-hmm.
and are much less likely to be in that fight mode
mm-hmm.
where they want to go and make trouble for somebody else.
All right. Let's talk. You said you mentioned that you had some things to say about fear. Let's talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
What is the role of fear in the midst of conflict?
Fear often is the basis of conflict. You know, the fear of the unknown. I use the example of the Blair Witch Project, for example, if anybody who's seen that movie or knows anything about it, part of the reason why it worked so well, you know, it's this very low-budget film that doesn't use a whole lot of special effects, but that actually is what works for it, is that you can't really see what's going on. You can kind of hear things, and people are afraid, and there's noises, and you know, things going bump in the night, but you really can't see it. And so that fear of the unknown is a huge motivator where, you know, people acting defensively is concerned. So often when you have people in a wedding party who are behaving in really unfortunate ways, right? They're being
mm-hmm.
very combative, argumentative, and disagreeable. Often they're afraid of something, and they themselves may not be totally aware of what they're afraid of. But it isn't until somebody recognizes and says, rather than saying, you're just obnoxious, you know, stepping back and saying, what are you afraid of?
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps a direct approach like that is not the best approach, because they're going to be in defense mode. So, of course, they're going to be, I ain't afraid of nothing, right? So it's not about coming to say, what are you afraid of, but recognizing that there's fear involved,
mm-hmm.
and then having a conversation that allows for discussion to happen around that fear. But fear is a prime motivator for many behaviors. And in this situation of a wedding, there's tons of things to be afraid of.
Yes. I've heard a lot of moms feel like they're losing their child.
Mm-hmm.
In a sense, they're losing their child, so they're losing their position, you know, the very thing that makes them who they are. You know what I mean?
Right.
I've heard a mother say, it's because of my son that makes me a mother.
Mm-hmm.
And if I lose him, what does that make me? And I'm like, well, what do you mean you're still a mother?
Mm-hmm.
So you're absolutely right with that. It's some sort of fear of loss of either position or love or something. The fear
mm-hmm.
does play a huge factor in
so
the way they behave.
Right. So what I would do in that situation is if the mom says, you know, I fear that I'm no longer going to be a mother and that so much of my identity, you know, comes from that, that's so important to me, then I would say to them, I first start by asking them, tell me about being your son's mother. What has that been like?
Mm-hmm.
What makes you happy about being your son's mother?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what are the things that you do that make you your son's mother? And often...
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm, go on.
I was going to say that often in the course of that conversation, we can start to talk about ways in which, you know, she is still important in his life.
Mm-hmm.
That she may be concerned that now he has a wife and she is the primary person in his life. You know, when you get married, they say, no one shall put them asunder.
And, yeah, leave and cleave.
You know,
leave and cleave.
Leave and cleave, yes. So, you know, there is that really important aspect of what's going on as they're getting married. And so it's important to acknowledge that this very significant change is happening in their relationship, but it doesn't mean the end of their relationship. It's also a matter of talking with her about how she sees her son, you know, as an adult, as a grown-up, as an independent person with his own life, what love means to her and what it means to express love, you know, about concerns that she might have about attachment and where attachment can actually poison love. Mm-hmm. So there's an opportunity to have, you know, quite a conversation about it. But in order to get intel of that, I would want to first understand what it, her role as a mother means to her. What are her interests as a mother? What are her needs? What needs are met
mm-hmm.
by her being, you know, the mother of her son?
Right.
And then we get to, then we understand exactly what is she afraid of.
Right.
What is she afraid of losing? And then she can, we can query, you know, is she actually losing that?
Right. I mean, what you said a little bit earlier made a whole lot more sense was, does she think that this is just the end? Is she just fearful that this is just the end of who she is? And is that another reason why? Because, of course, that type of fear, I've also seen that type of fear step in and make them dislike the whole entire situation of the person getting married. This person
mm-hmm.
is just no good for you. And I'm
mm-hmm.
like, wait a minute. Well, what do you know about this person that makes them no good? You know, what is
mm-hmm.
the problem?
Mm-hmm.
I've just seen so many different things in the weddings that I've been a part of that I'm just like, you've got to be kidding me. And as you, these were like rational individuals, rational, intelligent individuals who would say things like this. And I'm like, but you have to know that that's not true.
Well, there's something about that I want to say, that we as a culture worship rationality. You know, there's some ways I think we overemphasize that to the detriment of being able to trust our instincts.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes you just know things. And
why do you say it like that? You just knew.
No, it's true. Sometimes you just know things. And so you don't know why, you know,
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't make rational sense and so forth. But I wouldn't out of hand dismiss those feelings
mm-hmm.
from people. And so, you know, coming in as a professional, as a mediator, I would want to bring everybody together to talk these things through. True enough, not everybody should be married. Not everybody recognizes that they shouldn't be married, and not everybody recognizes that they would have the support of their families if they decided to walk away.
Right.
Some people feel a responsibility to go through with it. I said yes, I accepted the ring, they bought the dress, they bought the flowers, they put the deposit down, all this money has gone into it. I can't walk away from this.
Right, right. I've definitely seen that. And
right?
that has been disastrous in certain scenarios that I've watched, where they just went through with it anyway, even though something in their gut was telling them not to. But then that comes to the word expectation. Like you said, they were expected to go through with this wedding for whatever reason.
Or they believed they were expected to go through it. And if the families had actually gotten together and sat down, and the friends and so forth, they might have recognized or realized mm-hmm. that they actually had the support of their family. So we're saying, money is money. Don't worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
We want you to be safe and happy
right.
and healthy.
Right.
You know, we prioritize that for you.
Wow. All right. Okay. So we'll say it all again. It's a part of making sure, or at least addressing the conflict between two families, is first by starting off knowing who your wedding team is, and make sure that they know what their responsibilities are and who is going to be making the final decisions on certain things that are happening in the wedding.
Mm-hmm.
Another point you made was to know what you are listening for. Listen first and then know what you're listening for.
Mm-hmm.
And know that you're listening for interests and needs.
Right. Don't want to discount the positions. Of course, you want to know what the position is, but you mm-hmm. what often gets overlooked are the interests and needs, and that's why I emphasize that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then it's really important, once you've understood the interests and the needs, to reflect that back so that the other person knows that you have actually heard them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Of course. And then you spoke about expectations.
Right.
How do we get individuals to really express their expectations in order to get through the conflict, even though they may or may not receive what they're expecting? But I think a lot of people have issues expressing exactly what it is that they expect from a situation. And And here's the question that I have. Do mm-hmm. parents have the right to expect something or expect anything from their child's intended? It's something that I did ask a group of women once, and the answers that I got were pretty surprising when I said, what do you expect from, you know, the person that your child is marrying? And, of course, they say, I expect them to take care of them. I expect them to support them spiritually. I expect them to, you know, do this, this, and this. And then another set of women said, it's not even right for me to have any expectations because that relationship is between them and God.
Mm-hmm.
So the question behind that is, what is the role of expectation within, I mean, does it depend on the family, and how do you get people to actually express what the expectation is?
Well, my approach to that is this. Expectation is another form of position.
Hmm.
So I would want to ask the question, what do you need? What do you need from your son-in-law?
Mm-hmm.
What do you need from your new daughter?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what are your interests? What are your needs? Because an expectation, again, is another form of a position.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's basically it. I would try to get away from dealing at the level of expectation.
What level is expectation on? Here's the question. What level is expectation on?
It's the level of opinion, right? It's the level of position.
Mm-hmm.
So I tell people when I'm conflict coaching, which is also something else that I do. So, you know, mediation is where I'm working with a group of people and I'm facilitating a process by which they can come to resolve their differences. Conflict coaching is where I work one-on-one with someone to help them to be able to practice and go back into a conflict situation on their own. And that's especially useful if the other people who are parties to the conflict or to the dispute won't come in,
mm-hmm.
right? So the conflict coaching is an option. But one of the things that I say to them is that, you know, people really don't care what you think.
That's
they
harsh.
Really don't care what you think.
Mm-hmm.
But they often do and are more likely to care about how you feel. And they can't argue with you about how you feel. They can argue with you about what you think.
True.
Yes, it is. No, it's not. Yes, it is. No, it's not. You know, you can do that going back and forth thing all the time.
Right.
But when it comes to how you feel, that's yours. That's how you feel. They may not like how you feel. They may not agree with how you feel, but they can't tell you you don't feel that way.
Right. Right. They actually have no position there. They have because they can't tell if it's true or false.
Well, they have to take your word for it that this is how you feel. And I'm going to just say this. It is to your advantage to be honest about how you feel.
Wow.
Right? It is to one's advantage to be honest about how they feel, because how can that need be addressed if one is not honest about it? So, again, you know, what do people expect from their new family members? What do people expect from the wedding? I would rather ask the question, what do you need?
Okay. Okay, but is that really wise in a situation when it comes to planning a wedding? Who matters, you know, in the wedding is another question. You would think that it's just the bride and the groom, but what are the levels? You have the bride and the groom. You have the parents of both the bride and the groom. You have the feelings of the best friend. You have the feeling of, you know, the bridesmaids. Do you have to ask, what do you need from these individuals?
I would suggest it. I recommend it. And the process is actually much faster than people might think.
Mm-hmm.
In the beginning, it may seem time intensive. I'm going to talk in terms of the difference between mediation and litigation for just a second. When I'm mediating, and it is one major issue with a number of sub-issues, let's say, and there are 2 to 3 people, maybe 4 people involved, I can pretty much predict to you that it's going to take about 2 hours to reach a resolution on the issues.
Wow.
It's going to be about 2 hours. And the first 45 minutes or so might seem like a hard slog for the people, but there's something that happens after the 45-minute, maybe an hour mark, where all of a sudden it seems like, oh my goodness, I now understand what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I can empathize with the humanity in this person who I was so upset with before,
mm-hmm.
you know, just now. And so then a resolution can be brought about that everybody will adhere to because they were all involved. They all had an interest
right.
in creating that resolution.
Mm-hmm.
When you're talking about litigation where people are very rights-oriented and, you know, it's my right, I have an expectation, this is how it must be, that's where you're talking about situations that take longer
mm-hmm.
and also a situation where a third party often will have to come in and make a decision for them.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's happy, and either side is likely to violate the agreement because it's not their agreement.
Right.
It was imposed on them. So that's one of the differences between using a rights-based versus a needs-based approach to addressing the conflict. Now, I will say again that it's useful to bring a third person in. I think, you know, people might ask, well, why, you know, should I bring in a mediator? And I think of it this way. It's like asking the question, you know, why should I go to class if I can read a book?
Mm-hmm.
It is helpful to have somebody who's an expert who can sit and listen in a non-judgmental way. They're trained to be able to do this. They're trained and have practiced
mm-hmm.
At being able to hear what are the interests and the needs and to be able to facilitate a process where people can actually hear each other.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that's why I reiterate that you can it be done on an individual basis? Yes, and there's some people who are especially gifted at being able to be peacemakers and so forth. But if things seem to be really going awry, or if you want to make sure that your wedding party has already set up a process for communication, and that's a beautiful thing,
mm-hmm.
If you can do that from the get-go, get somebody to come in
mm-hmm.
and help you set that up, help you set up the lines of communication so that it never has to be a problem.
Well, I first want to just say thank you for the explanation of the difference between the rights space and the needs space, because I think that actually clarifies for our listeners more of the process of clearing up a conflict when you're listening for the person's needs and making them more human than turning them into a law and
sure.
making, you know, and making it more about what you expect because of what the law says and someone else stepping in and making the decision for you. I just want to say thank you for saying that because that really makes things crystal clear.
Mm-hmm.
That was a crystal clear explanation. I think people will understand better what you do, how you do it, why you do it, and how it works. And it may or may not work better for individuals involved, depending on the emotional state of the
yes.
people involved.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there's tremendous limit to the kind of satisfaction that you can get in a rights-based process. You know, a rights-based process cannot give you an apology.
Right.
A rights-based process cannot give you acknowledgement of your humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what a needs-based process is all about.
Right, figuring out what each person needs. Now, you know, we're going to wrap up in another minute or two. I want to remind you that when we first started discussing mediation, you used an analogy that I liked even better, something about the orange. Do you remember
oh,
that?
Yes. Yes, about the orange.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't like publicizing that because then it means that I can't use that scenario when I'm training.
Okay, so then, all right, then let's not do it.
I will do it.
No, I just thought it was brilliant when you explained it to me, and I was like, that, I mean, that's just simple enough, and any, I will say the word rational person listening to why they should go into a mediator to help them in a situation would hear this and go, she's absolutely right, or, you know, they're absolutely right. This is the type of, you know, this is the type of situation that I need. It's not about me winning everything. It's about
right.
me just getting what I need.
I need. Well, let me go ahead and explain it. You've brought it up, and I think it's important for people to know. The orange, very quickly, is a situation where we have two people who are fighting over an orange. One has a cold and would like to use the orange for vitamin C. The other one needs to bake a cake for their mother's birthday, and her favorite cake is an orange cake, and she needs the zest for the cake. Now, the people, of course, don't understand why each person needs the orange. All they know is there's only one orange, and they have to negotiate for the orange. And it isn't until they open up and share their needs that one person says, well, I want orange juice, and the other person says, I want orange zest, that they discover that they can both have 100% of what they need
mm-hmm.
from that one orange.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because one only needs the juice and one only needs the peel.
Mm-hmm.
So this is talking about why it is important and powerful to share needs and interests in coming to resolve what seems to be a really intractable dispute.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I have to say, so individuals who are getting married and you're in the middle of a family conflict, using this analogy, you might be able to find that everyone can get 100% of exactly what they need from this relationship if you just share what it is that you need. You won't need the whole part of what's coming together, but if you share that you need time, or you share you need to know someone better, or you share you need to feel more secure in what's happening, you might just get 100% of what you need without causing conflict within your family. I want to thank Batavile Ntombeni for coming on the show. You've really shared a lot and opened up minds and eyes with what you shared. So promise that you're going to come back on the show.
I will.
Okay. Okay. Again, guys, if you did get something out of this show, please do let us know. Email me, Cynthia@bridaltribe.com, because I happen to like a lot of what she was saying. Let us know if you're using any of these tips within any types of conflicts that are happening, not just while you're wedding, planning your wedding, but also in your marriage or any kind of relationship. You have, you know, your relationship with your maid of honor, your relationship with your sisters, anything. These are real important relationship points that she shared tonight, and I have to admit that there are definitely going to be some serious nuggets of wisdom for me to use from today and moving forward in other situations. Once again, I want to thank everybody for listening in, and again, for all your encouragement for our show. You know the story. We are a company about love, beauty, fun, weddings, and marriage, and we are dedicated to love. We will talk to you again. You know what? I completely forgot that the holidays are coming up. Happy holidays, Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, everything to our listeners. We will not be on the air next week, but I will post up a previous show that you can listen to, or you can just go into our archives. If you go to blogtalkradio.com/bridaltribe, you'll be able to listen to any of the previous shows for some wisdom that you need. And remember, we had Wedding Planner on, we had Dr. Dwayne Schick come on to talk about his book, Some Things That You Need to Know About Weddings or Marriage Before the Wedding and After, too. There are plenty of different shows that you're going to listen to. And as a matter of fact, I'm going to post up my favorites in the event. And that way you can listen next week and the week after, because I believe that's going to be New Year. So Happy New Year to everyone if I don't come back on and do a show. And Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays to you all. We love you. We can't wait to get back together into the New Year for some new and wonderful things that are happening. Again, we're dedicated to love. Have a wonderful evening. Good night.